Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
On today's program, we're going to speak to you parents of teens and tweens, and that's 11 and 12-year-olds or something like that, in case you don't know what they are. And if your kids aren't 13 yet, they soon will be. And for those of you whose offspring are grown and gone, congratulations. I trust all of them turned out well. But you older guys and gals, please listen in anyway so that you can help out your adult children with their children, your grandchildren, when they become teens. And here's a question for all of you who have one or more teens at home this summer. Whatever happened to your sweet, respectful, loving children around the time they entered middle school? How in the heck did they morph into moody, self-absorbed, and brooding teenagers, almost like strangers in your midst? As a parent, how did you go from primary role model, the one adult that your kids trusted most and turned to for advice, into that out-of-touch dork always nosing into their business, setting intolerable limits, and foolishly instructing them how to live their lives? They know more than you, after all, in their minds. And for added pressure, as if you didn't have enough, summer is here, school is out, and unless you ship them off to camp for the next 3 months, you'll have a lot more time to spend around your teenager. And with no school assignments or teacher discipline, maybe not even a part-time job, your teens will have all the time in the world to act out, run wild, thumb their noses at you, and make foolish decisions. And furthermore, now that they're out of school, how in the world will you keep tabs on your teens, especially if both of you are working parents or you're a single working parent, and make certain that they're safe and are staying out of trouble? And without question, you love your teens and want them to want to remain involved in their lives, protecting them and guiding them to take the final steps to a safe, joyful, and productive adulthood. But how? Teens know it all, and as ancient middle age relics, and heck, the teenager's middle age begins around age 30. You're so out of it. Mom and Dad, you haven't the faintest clue of how to interact and thrive in today's super cool iPhone and social media driven world. And let's admit it, the world is a lot different now than when we were teenagers in that prehistoric era. Traditional family dynamics have changed drastically in the past 20 years, so you and I may need to adjust the way we parent, and parents today deal with a great deal more stressors than did our fathers and mothers in traditional families of the past. More divorces, single-parent households, blended families, dual working parents, and then there's teen and tween access to the internet, social media, video games, and God knows what other corrupting influences. And here's another problem. In our middle years, we live our own jam-packed, busy, and stressful lives. We know we should communicate more with our teenagers and take more interest in their day-to-day lives, but who has the time or energy? And especially when son or daughter make it abundantly clear they'd much rather be playing video games, plugged into music, or shouting out to friends on social media. And sure, you and I know that the teen knew that they were coming, the teen years, but do they have to be this difficult? But I've got some good news. My guest today, parenting coach Laura Reagan, is here to gently inform us that why most of us parents make raising our teens a lot harder than it has to be. And better yet, she's here to introduce easier yet more effective tactics for teen parenting. And Laura Reagan holds a Master of Science degree in sociology. She spent 22 years as a community advocate, specializing in child and youth development, academic success, and models parenting and family poverty issues. She's a professional parenting coach, speaker, and an experienced media guest, and her passion is helping families. And she's author of the forthcoming book to be released this November titled How to Raise Respectful Parents. and I'm certain we'll all want to keep our eyes out for Laura's book, and she'll preview it for us today. And hello, Laura, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thank you. Let's hope it is. Let's hope it is. And appreciate that introduction. Wow, how generous. And you made me tired describing the struggle that we live through with our team.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I'd like to begin with two or three of perhaps your most controversial arguments. In your promotional material, you tell us as parents of teens that we should adopt a more robot-like attitude. And to me, that seems counterintuitive. To break through to our teens, don't we need to be more warm, loving, and compassionate? Why in the world would we parent like robots?
Well, I, you're not parenting like robots, but you are responding to bait almost as if it's robots.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah,
right.
It's so easy to let them draw you into the fray.
Right. In fact, that's one of the premises, is that that's their job. It is truly their job to define away from us, and we want that. Otherwise, you'd have 30-year-olds living at home still.
Some of us do, but no, not me.
But the way that they define away from us is by expressing oftentimes, flamboyant opinions and ideas that are different to the way that and values that we've raised them with. And
yeah.
So it's understanding that they're going to do that. They have to do that. It is part of the developmental phase.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Right.
Well, here's another shocker. You indicate that parents need to stop trying to limit their teens' friends. I know when our son and daughter were teenagers, one of our biggest concerns was who they hung around with, especially the boys who our daughter dated. So what do you mean by that?
Now, dating and friendships are two different things.
Okay, I agree with that.
They are, and I understand that. And by no means am I setting any rule for any household that's particular to the individual and the individual family.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we do is we overreact easily.
Yeah.
We perceive that the moment is forever, and it's not. It's simply a moment. Their entire job as teens is to experiment with life outside of this nest that we've created for them, with the value system that we've created for them.
Yeah.
And they do not get to experience the full spectrum of who they are and make positive choices in adulthood unless they've experienced other things. So I think it's more supporting that experimentation and saying, I respect something about this friend. What do you get them to talk about it? Simply open-ended questions are really powerful. What do you like about this guy? What are you interested in? What does he do that's cool? What don't you like about him? What do you want to do differently? You're not judging, you're being very open-ended, but you're coaching them to think through the moment and move beyond where they are in the initial
thinking through what do you really want as friends, and what like you say, what do you really benefit do you see by being a friend with so-and-so?
Right.
Well, look,
it could be the cool guy is not afraid of authority figures. And if you've got a shy teen, that might look really attractive.
Yeah, we had a guy like that our daughter was interested in that we weren't very excited about, but it may have been that. But well, here's a somewhat related question. If we don't try to limit our teens' friends, is it okay to set curfews and to insist that our teens be home at a set time, or is that something we should try to
control? I think structure is the only way to build positive relationships. The kinds of things that I'm talking about that we make it harder than it has to be is not understanding where the teen is developmentally or what they're experiencing in their teen culture that is different from adult culture.
Yeah.
But it does not mean you stop parenting. In fact, the opposite is true. Teen time is a time that you have to say these are the boundaries, with the understanding that they're going to push against them. It's their job to push against them, but it's our job to stand firm about, in this household, we do it this way.
Yeah,
and
when you have
your own household and you're paying your own bills, this is the simple truth, you could choose something different.
Yeah,
but this is how
that's
we do it here.
Well, I know it's not an immediate issue because it's summer, but when are teens to return to school this fall? Are there effective ways to prevent them from getting bad grades, and what are those ways?
Okay, great. I think one of the biggest ways we can do that is to stay relational with the teen, and then, of course, stay relational with the school. And one of the things that I talk about in the book are about how to communicate in a way that doesn't call forth the defenses. You know, yeah. Instead of saying, you know, did you study for that math test? it's more, tell me about the math test. What are you doing to prepare for it? How can I help? And you'll get a sense of them either pushing back, I don't want you involved in this, or, this is algebra is really confusing to me. I might actually need help, Mom. I might actually need a tutor. And if you find that there's conflict between you and the child about help or the teen about help, then maybe an outside party can be of assistance.
Well, do you believe in monetary rewards for good grades or for taking privileges?
Oh, boy, that's a big one, isn't it? That's a big one. You know, I really don't have an issue either way. I'm okay either way. It's the judgment call of that parent. You know, we have monetary awards for what we do as adults.
Yeah, that's true.
So if that's the choice and of that family culture, then that's fine. the issue is being consistent with that rule. You know, you can't do it for one and not another. You can't change the rules about what the payoff is in the middle of, you know, the semester, whatever that reward is.
I tend
to like more intrinsic motivation because that's what you're trying to grow as a healthy adult. You know,
that's very true. You want to do it because
you don't want a kid to grow up to just fulfill a job. You want them to find a sense of passion about what they do in their work life. And I tend to fall more on those intrinsic wins, if you will.
Yeah, find passion in what you really want to do at school and excel in that. And, you know, you can't fail in other classes. You have to at least maintain minimum standards. But, you know, you're really pursuing what might be your future life choices. And
again, that's the time. Teen time is, and the teen era is the time that you discover all of those things. You want to be experimenting with different interests.
Yeah. Well, obviously, as they mature, we want to encourage our teens to think for themselves and make their own wise choices. But as you pointed out, there must be a few hard and fast ground rules. Where should we parents draw the line in the sand, and how best do we enforce these rules? Like, what forms of punishment do you recommend if they break those firm guidelines? Or how do we do that? And do you believe
punishment? I'm not really into punishment. I'm more into natural consequences. You know, what is the natural consequence of that action? And allowing that natural consequence to take place. It's really easy to see when they're younger. You know, if they didn't pack the homework in the backpack, Mom doesn't run up to the school and deliver it so that the kid makes the grade on time. You know, you let the natural consequence take its place because you wouldn't do that in a work setting for an adult. And the only way adults become responsible is by having those experiences as kids. So what that looks like in teen life, I much prefer to honor, praise, and reward the good stuff rather than, quote-unquote, punish the negative stuff because it doesn't really change behavior. Allowing the natural consequence of things to unfold, you know, let the bad math grade happen. Go to the parent-teacher conference. If they need to flunk, they need to flunk. You know, don't coddle that situation, but provide the resources and the help that they need to be as successful as they can be.
No, that's an excellent suggestion. Well, during the summer months, should we ask our teens to keep us informed of location and activities during the day, including required call-ins at work for permission whenever they want to alter those plans? Or, you know, how do we keep tabs on
that's a hard and fast rule for my teen girls is I need to know where you are at all times.
Okay.
Not because I don't trust you, but because accidents happen, and I don't want to get a phone call from an authority figure and not be able to answer that.
No,
so,
I think that's reasonable enough, obviously, to ask them just to call in and keep you informed. You're not trying to tell them exactly what they can do every hour of the day.
Right. And these days, you know, a lot of teens, and this controversial issue too about when to allow cell phones in a teen's life, but a lot of days teens have cell phones.
Sure.
And
that's for sure.
They have a GPS tracking system in them that teens know how to disable very well.
Yeah.
And one of the rules we've had is, you know, if the GPS goes off, I call the police.
Oh,
you know, I just need to know where you are.
Yeah.
And the phone has to stay charged. It can't be, oh, I ran out of battery.
Yeah.
You know, I have a driver, a teen driver. And the rule is the cell phone's in your truck, you know, with you, so that I can reach you. And she's 18, and there are no longer any, you know, she's really truly free to come and go.
Yeah,
but I framed it as saying, you know, okay, we're roommates now.
Yeah.
This is different. How would you treat a roommate? You know, you don't want a roommate to call the police at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning when you can't find them. So if you will be courteous, because that's what people that care about one another do, and let me know where you are and what time to expect you. There's no curfew with her being an adult, but what time to expect you, I would appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, as parents, how in the heck can we get a grip on today's teen culture without trying to force ourselves on our sons and daughters and winding up with resentful teens thinking we're a dork?
Right. If they even use that word anymore, right? A decade ago, my oldest daughter was using the word lame. Mom, that's lame.
Yeah, that's.
I think being keyed in on teen culture in terms of music and some programs, and my youngest is into YouTube heroes that she loves to listen and watch. There's some funny stuff out there. And it's not.
I don't have to go to a Justin Bieber concert, do I?
No. But one of the things that I've done to build a relationship with my youngest and to just stay connected, which really does help the guidance issue. You know, if they know you're coming from a place of interest and care, then mom's opinion still counts. So I say do your homework, you know, lay the ground rule up for having known who the friends are, not again in a policing way, but in a way that you can have influence in their lives. Research tells us even as teens, believe it or not, even though they're defining away from you, that they still listen to their parents as their primary role model. So we have a lot of power and influence there. And you only get it by investing in the time and the energy to get to know where they are. And one of the things Bob and I do is when we take a road trip, we switch out music. So I hear some of hers and she gets to hear some of my oldies, you know, and we educate one another.
I still remember the road trips with my daughter, extensive road trips when she was visiting potential colleges or visiting her relatives in Detroit, Michigan, and listening to her music most of the way there, and it just was not my taste at all. But I did learn some things about it by listening into what the kids are listening to. But in your upcoming book, you talk about co-creation, a joint effort between parent and child, in this case a teenager. What is co-creation, and how does it work, and how does it differ from traditional parent-teen interaction?
Thank you so much for asking that. Co-creation is a social theory that talks about the equal force of each party in the relationship. They even talk about co-creation in business and that's what a good business partnership is like. And the business of raising kids is about preparing them for adulthood. You know, it's not about making a mini-me. It's not about sequestering them away and protecting them. You know, that's what infancy and toddlerhood is about. But when they're teens, it's really about preparation for adulthood. So everything they're doing with you is practice for the future. And if we shift our focus that way and we talk about, okay, how can I prepare them to speak professionally? You know, well, they need to speak well with me. They need to be respectful but also assertive with me.
Yeah.
And not see that as a challenge or something I have to shut down or be threatened by as a parent, but how do I support them expressing fully who they are in the world?
Yeah, and really being interested in their point of view, obviously, and not just saying my way is the only way and my way is the right way.
Exactly, exactly. And the book has some techniques for kids about how to approach parents in that way and to take the risks that they need to take in the communication with the parent relationship, and that they will then prepare them for the future. Because that's what we're all going to need. They're the ones that are going to be taking care of us in the future.
That may be true. Well, you compare effective parenting of teens with horse whispering. I thought that was interesting. Briefly describe how we parents might employ tactic of a successful horse whisperer in co-creating an effective parent-offspring relationship. Are our teens really a different species?
Like <who's> the horse? They feel like that sometimes, don't they?
Yeah, that's for sure.
No, they're not a different species, but they're also not little adults, and we expect them to be in many ways, you know. So it's about tuning into their behavior. When a horse whisperer works with a horse, they're actually monitoring the nonverbal communication and moving in or pulling away from based on the cues that the horse is giving. So they learn what they call is the language of equus. Well, we as parents kind of have to learn the language of teens. You know, we have to invest the time and energy to build a quality relationship that gets to know where they are. And then out of that, you're the translator for the adult world. Teens desperately need parents to know how to operate in the world. You know, I'm doing things like, I remember when my youngest had to go fill up her gas tank for the first time, you know, and what it was like to swipe the credit card and coach through that. You know, we know things that they don't know.
Yeah.
And they have to be confident enough to take those risks, be willing to make mistakes, and work through it. It's the same with communication. And if we're not in, co-creation is about jointly problem solving, really.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Well, let's talk a little bit about your upcoming book, How to Raise Respectful Parents. What was your purpose in writing your book, and what inspired you to write it?
Oh, thanks for asking that. Well, I think having been a teen light years ago is part of that, even though we're a different world. I kind of wrote the book that I wanted to have when I was a teenager. And then I've been approached because I've done so much in youth development, nonprofit work. I've been approached by parents that are struggling to connect with teens and then also struggling to prepare them for the future. So this twist is about giving teens the tools they need to build positive communicative relationships, not only with parents, but enter the business world as also.
So our teenagers should read this as well as us, you're saying?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. In fact, the book is geared towards teens, and in a year or two, I'll release the parent one. But it's great for both teen and parent because the relating skills are the same.
So this would be a good Christmas present for our teens. I guess it's scheduled to come out in November, you said?
It is indeed. Yeah, thanks for saying that. We really hope so.
And where should we look for it to keep track of when it's available?
It'll be on Amazon, but I have book updates that are coming out through my website, and that's LauraLReagan.com. And you can sign up for the book updates, Laura L. Reagan, spelled REAGAN.com.
Just like present.
right, but no relation.
No.
And then we do have a download that is about top tips for relationship building between teen and parents.
Oh, that's great. No, so that's they should go to LauraLReagan.com. I notice you're a parenting coach. Where should a listener go to make contact if they need coaching advice right now? You know, they can't wait for the book.
Right. Well, I'm happy to do that, and I do have a private practice. I work through Skype or telephone, whatever folks are most comfortable with, and they can reach me through the website as well. That's Laura at LauraLReagan.com.
Okay, fine. We'll tell people to do that then. And in conclusion, summer is here, and if you're like most of us, your teens more than likely will get on your nerves and you on theirs. And as I see it, you have a choice this summer. Struggle to through until fall, short of temper, frayed nerves, and an ever-widening disconnect between you and your teens. Or you can make a conscious effort to co-create a better relationship with your teenager. And is this really a choice? And my advice, and I'm certain Laura would agree, look on this summer with positive expectations, not dread. Make it your goal this summer to enhance communication and co-create mutual understanding and acceptance. And by employing Laura's co-creation strategy, you can improve give and take, relate to your teen as an almost adult life partner. Yes, you remain the senior partner, and you'll build a relationship of mutual trust that will carry over to the future once your teens leave home, venture out, and launch their own adult lives, and that's a genuine win-win situation. And thank you, Laura Reagan, and best of success on your forthcoming book.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And we'll keep an eye out for it. And if you need immediate teen parenting advice, here's where to go, to Laura's website, because Laura will soon offer a free summer relationship building exercise set in PDF. And that's on that same website. Is that where?
Yes, sir.
So that can be downloaded at no cost to your computer, and that sounds like a great resource for all of you. Once again, check out her website, lauralreagan.com. And Laura Reagan, thank you so much for joining us today with your most timely parenting advice for the beginning of summer. And best
thank
of success
you.
With your forthcoming book.
I appreciate the time.
Narrow our focus a bit. My next guest, Deborah Ann Davis, is here to talk to parents of teenage or soon-to-be teenage daughters, and she's on a mission to help countless teenage girls who repeatedly make bad dating choices, also to encourage young, inexperienced teens to avoid making that first bad choice. And you parents of teenage sons, please don't tune us out. You may be able to help your son become one of the good guys that enlightened teenage girls will be seeking out. And Deborah Ann Davis also is here to dispel some common myths about teenage dating and sexual interaction. For about 20 years, she has surveyed high school students on the topics of sex, drugs, and alcohol. And like me, you may be surprised to learn that teen promiscuity is a lot less common than most people think, including the teens themselves. And Deborah Ann Davis is a 27-year educator. But as she puts it, although somewhere in the middle of educating, I stopped out for 6 years to do the mommy thing and run the office of our family construction company. As a high school biology teacher, she seeks to debunk so many sex myths believed by inexperienced teens, and she's presently an educational speaker and author of an award-winning series of young adult fiction, Fairly Certain, Fairly Safe, and the upcoming Fairly Obvious. And this fall, she'll release her nonfiction workbook, A Girl's Guide to Good Guys, The Power of Being Picky and Patient. Great title, and that's what we'll talk about today. And hello, Deborah, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hi there. Glad to be here.
Well, back when I was in high school, and I'm certain it's true today, I believe that everyone else in our class was sexually active except me. But, of course, I never would admit that I was not. You have surveyed high school students on their sexual experience for over 20 years. Is it, in fact, true that almost everybody in their teenage years is having sex?
No, it's not true at all. When I surveyed them, I did it under the guise of data collection and analysis in a science class.
Yeah.
So I could get away with asking them just brief questions, like were they or weren't they?
Yeah.
For the freshmen, it turned out that 2 to 5% of them were actually dabbling with sex.
Oh, wow.
But 90% of them believed that everybody was.
Huh.
So I would give them results of the survey, and then they'd say, no, there's no way. Everybody lied. And I'd say, no, this is, you know, a bubble sheet. You fill it in. I mean, who here lied? They'd say, well, I didn't lie.
Yeah.
I said, okay, well, we'll do the survey again. So I'd give them the survey, and then the next day I'd give them the results, which would be the same. And even though they got the same results 2 days in a row, they still would not believe it.
Even
that's the part that always floored me.
Yeah, you even found that juniors and seniors weren't all that sexually active, I guess, according to your surveys.
No, it's like pretty close to 10%.
Wow.
And most people think it's closer to 90%. Yeah. But the interesting thing about the older kids is 100% of them believe everybody else was having sex.
Well, the actual incredibly low incidence of teen sex is good news, but the typical teen's mistaken belief that everyone else is doing it may be bad news is full-blown
yes.
adolescent insecurity pitted against that magical sexual propaganda likely to tempt our teenagers to throw caution to the wind. I would think it would.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The movies, everything mixes up the difference between romance and sex. And then you've got the teenage brain that is influencing them, which is a scary place to go in the first place.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how does a female teenager's brain make it so difficult for her to date wisely? What's going on in there?
Well, it's actually for teenage girls and boys. When
yeah.
I was raising my daughter, who is now 26,
oh.
and in law school and kicking butt and taking names. So yeah. That worked out well. But when
yeah.
she was being raised, the data was that the brain was formed around 3 years old and just grew.
Oh.
And now they understand that the brain forms from the back to the front. And guess what the front part of the brain is responsible for? Logic and reasoning.
Yeah.
So they were doing MRI studies on teenagers, and they would show a girl or a boy a picture of their boyfriend or girlfriend, and
yeah.
they could see that four separate areas of the brain were triggered, but
oh.
not the logic and reasoning area.
Oh, great. Well, with more
so
free
that's
time...
that's one of the reasons.
Yeah. With more free time, no school supervision, and outdoor necking parties, the risk is especially great in the summer months. What kind of preparation can and should we parents make early this summer to keep our teenage daughters safe? Or is there anything we can do to...
The biggest tool parents have in their arsenal is conversation.
Yeah.
If you talk to your kids about it, I mean, for some people, you've got graduation parties coming up. So
yeah.
everything I'm saying applies to those parties.
Yeah,
basically,
sure.
you have a plan. You discuss the plan with your teenager. You say that you're, like, for a graduation party or summer party, that they
yeah.
need to check in with you every hour.
Good
and
idea.
Then you outline the consequences if they don't follow your rules.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the most important thing is you have to enforce those consequences if they break the rules. It's the
yeah.
only way to keep them safe.
Yeah. Well, here's the million-dollar question. How in the world can we parents get our teenage daughters to listen to our advice? And what are some resources we parents can use to talk to our teens? I know that discipline, the consequence you talk about is part of it. But how can we make them want to listen, in effect?
Well, my approach has always been to go the humorous way. So if you are that kind of a parent, go to my website, and there's a quiz on there called Sex Myths Believed by Inexperienced Teens.
Yeah.
So that will give them something to giggle about and open
yeah.
up the conversation.
Yeah,
but
I was just noticing that. go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, there's also a couple of books out there. I recommend a book called Dial Down the Drama by Colleen O'Grady.
Oh, I see.
And another one called Growing Courageous Girls by Priscilla Wainwright.
Yeah, I think we've had Colleen on this program before, actually. I recognize that name. But
stuff is very, very good. Basically, it says, you know, as parents, you know, we're in the Middle Ages here. We have anxiety about talking to our teenagers. And
yeah.
that ramps up and heightens our reactions to what they say and do.
Yeah, we're so sensitive ourselves. And then it
right, it hurts our feelings.
Then it becomes a game of protect your own rear and, you know, don't take it from your teenager. And when two people get defensive, obviously they can't have a good conversation. But
exactly. And if you're having a fight with your child, there can only be two outcomes.
Yeah.
Either the child wins, which you don't want that,
no.
or you win, and then you end up with a beat-down child, and you
yeah.
don't want that.
No, you
so
don't want either of those.
The point is to talk, to have conversations. even if they're not something where you're trying to create a rule or a disciplinary action,
yeah,
a conversation you can have is, what if your 30-year-old self were to walk into the room right now? Would they high-five you and say thank you for the decisions you made? Or would they say, hey, why did you let us get that STD? Or, hey, why did you let us get pregnant? I mean, those are conversations you can have. And if you don't feel comfortable having them about, you know, me and you as mommy and daughter, say, do you think your best friend's 30-year-old self would say to her? And put it all in the frame reference of the best friend or somebody in their school that the child said, did you hear what so-and-so does? When the child comes home with a story about something going on in the school, you don't have to direct it specifically to the child, but throwing in that, what would their 30-year-old self say?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are some of the, you mentioned that quiz, what are a couple of those myths that we can relay to our daughters that from that quiz? Just, you don't have to give us all of them, but I love those, like, a girl can't get pregnant if she keeps her panties on was one of them.
Yeah, no, that is definitely possible that they can get pregnant if they're fooling around and they're wearing their panties. And it's not typical, of course, but as long as there is a stream of moisture, sperm can swim. And
like
they have they have a goal.
I like that. You can't get an STD or a sexually transmitted disease if you have sex just one time.
Oh, my Lord. I've had kids who told me they got pregnant because they borrowed one of the, you know, pills from their girlfriend. They thought that, well, you know, it prevents pregnancy, so I'll just take a pill. They are so confused about what's going on because the reality is they don't listen when we're having the talk because they're embarrassed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
but the reality is that out of the girls who have had sex, 80% of them regret it.
Oh, wow.
80% of them regret it. They wish they had waited.
Certainly worthwhile pointing out to your daughter then, I guess.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, if you have a girl who has had sex, then you have to calmly say to them, we have to go to the clinic.
Yeah.
My daughter called me up to tell me she had sex the first time she was in college.
Yeah.
She called me up and said, Mom, don't freak out. I have something to tell you. So the don't freak out was able to calm me down because I knew what was coming. She says, I had sex.
Yeah.
I said,
well, at least you had that trust between your daughter and you that it's wonderful that she would tell you that. But
she says, I had sex. And I said, then did you go to the clinic? And she starts yelling, I knew you'd freak out. I just knew you'd freak out. I knew it. And I'm sitting there going, did you go to the clinic?
Yeah.
Because the first thing you need to do if your child has sex is you need to get them to the clinic.
Yeah.
And you need to teach them that if you have sex, there are consequences to it.
Yeah, that's
because
for sure.
One in four teenagers who have sex get STDs.
Yeah. And,
for girls,
when they
it's not detectable.
The possible consequences of just a few moments of pleasure of what they can go through with an STD or pregnancy, an unwanted pregnancy, is just overwhelming. That's that they would think about that, and certainly those are good arguments that should be used to convince them that it's not that smart to have sex when you're a teenager. But let's talk a bit about your forthcoming book, A Girl's Guide to Good Guys. Give us a story behind the book. What motivated you to write it?
Well, I was in my classroom after school one day, and my door slams, and these two girls in tears come rushing up to me, and apparently they were being stalked by one of their boyfriends who was abusive.
Yeah.
And it was an ex-boyfriend, and he was mad, and so they wanted to know if they could use my room for their lock, because that's where he was catching them.
Yeah.
So I told them they could if they kept the drama away from my classroom, and if they came to see me once a week, because one of the girls had a boyfriend since the seventh grade and was going through this over and over and over.
Oh.
So this was not a new experience for them.
Yeah.
And I wanted to discuss with them the choices that they were making. But I had to make these into little challenges that would tweak their interest and not make them defensive.
Yeah.
So I ran into the girls about 5 years later, and one of them had laminated this little cheat sheet we had made of must-haves. The guys had to have these characteristics if they were going to be serious about them. And these were their own personal things
that
they were able to flesh out because they weren't paying attention to the media and other kids and influences of their generation.
Well,
and
is
then
your
she
book
showed
intended
me,
to be read by teenage girls, by parents, or by both? Who's your
It is a workbook. It's a set of challenges and exercises that the girls fill out. And
it would
be very easy for parents to go through it with them.
I see.
I would suggest parents answering the same questions, pretending they're the age they were that they're teenagers now.
Yeah,
so if you've got a 16-year-old, answer the questions as if you were 16 at that time. And answer them not the way you think would sound best to your teenage, like give them the best lesson. Answer them honestly, and then talk about regrets and appreciation.
Yeah, well, that's great. If there was one message you intended for readers to take away from your book, what would it be? I guess be patient or... wait for the right guy? What exactly?
The thing is that girls are on, everybody is on a continuum of development. You start when you're born and you finish when you die.
Yeah.
And it isn't that you're right or wrong or good or bad. It's just that you are learning. And you have to give yourself the benefit of the doubt when you make a mistake and pick yourself up and move on, because you are a miracle and a magnificent machine.
Yeah.
And you are developing.
Yeah.
And no one else besides you has a clue either.
No, that's for sure. And it's so unfortunate when a mistake in the past, you know, you let that constantly pull you down with regret, and it's so pointless because it doesn't accomplish anything, regretting what you did in the past other than as a lesson to what not to do in the future.
I'll add this point because it's a little off topic, but I just say that mean people, because this is an issue in school, mean people are mean because they are insecure.
Yeah, that's
right. If they were secure, they wouldn't be mean.
Well, where do we go to find your book, A Good Our Girl's Guide to Good Guys? I can't say it for some reason. When it comes out,
website,
where will we find it?
You can find it on my website. Of course, it'll be at Amazon and the bookstores.
Yeah.
But right now, you can go to my website at www.deborahanndavis.com/giveaway, because I have a couple of items there for your listeners there if they want to go and get them. And one of them is 10 Ways to Tell If You Are Ready for Sex. That's for your teenage girls.
Yeah.
And another one is 10 prom prep tips for parents, which I know we are beyond prom season, but all these tips apply to graduation parties and summer issues.
Anybody.
And then the third one is just for the parents, 10 ways to add movement into your day, because a physical you is a healthier you, and it makes it so much easier for you to dial down your stress by exercising and be able to deal with your teens.
No,
and I just also wanted to add that my name is spelled D-E-B-O-R-A-H-A-N-N, Davis.
Yeah, okay, so that's where we'd find that giveaway, and they sound like great, and the price is right on that.
Free,
well,
just
today,
all you got to do is go to the website.
Yeah. Today, both of our guests have emphasized the importance of effectively communicating with our teens, and I know most teens will tell mom and dad that we should bug off, but whatever they say, the truth is they still love their parents. They want and need our love, and deep down they crave our support and approval. And the simple truth, the insecure adolescent brain is constantly searching for its comfort zone, its path to full adult acceptance, happiness, and security. And it's just that your teen is so afraid of embarrassment or humiliation, and the peer pressure is so strong, they're no longer small, and we can't force our will upon our teenagers just because I said so. And as parents who care, we remain involved and interested. We can remain involved and interested. We can pick our moments, understand where our teens are coming from, and co-create with our teens a safe and optimal path to adulthood, respecting them for who they are and where they're coming from. and don't try to mold them into carbon copies of us. That's always a mistake. In return, it's okay to ask for your teen's respect as their parents. And believe me, as they mature into young adults, your teenage daughters and sons will love and respect you for being there and having their back. And thank you, Deborah Ann Davis, for your sage advice. I wish more teenagers could have you as their high school biology teacher.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And best of success with your forthcoming book, A Girl's Guide to Good Guys, and with your three teenage novels. And that's our program for today. And now let's all go out and enjoy the summer.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.